Outdoorsman Sam Cook retired this year from the Duluth News Tribune after 38 years of journalism. He joins us now on the phone to fill us in on what he's been up to and to talk all things outdoors. Welcome back to the Roadhouse, Sam Cook.
Thanks, Dave. Happy to be with you. And I'm sorry I missed my last scheduled appearance on your show. I apologize to your listeners and to you for missing that one.
Oh, we live future forward in radio, Sam.
All right.
Don't sweat it. I wasn't even going to mention it. But thanks.
Well, thanks. I wanted to say that.
No, it's quite all right. You were in town, that's right, last month for the Winter's Gathering. You featured keynote speaker of the Saturday Night Show, Why You Couldn't Go Back to Kansas. And boy, I'll tell you, Sam, that was my only question for you, is why? Why couldn't you go back to Kansas?
Oh, it was just once we figured out what was up here. You know, when you grow up in Kansas, you're really not oriented toward the North Woods and northern Minnesota. Everybody goes to Colorado to vacation, and that was great, but once we moved to Ely in 76, and once we figured out what was up here, we thought we were just going to stay a little while, but we just couldn't go back. I mean, I liked growing up in Kansas and everything, but this is the place we wanted to be.
Well, and you certainly made it a home, and really a huge impact on the region with your outdoor writing with the Duluth News Tribune for so many years. So many people so fond of your insights and your coverage. And if there's one theme with your work, it seemed to be great storytelling and the ability to take a reader right out to the blind or the woods and the waters that you so diligently reported on. Talk about the magic of that, Sam. What did it take to bring people into the moment?
Well, there wasn't much magic. There was just a notebook and a pencil or a pen and a camera. And it was a lot of work, but it was really fun. I loved going out and being with people who were taking me along with them to maybe their most sacred place in the outdoors, to duck hunt or fish or whatever. And it was a great pleasure to try to capture what that place, those experiences meant to them, to their families, to their friends, whatever. And so I would just try to be as open and soak everything up as much as I could and write a lot of things in my notebook so that I had plenty of details to put into the story, and then come back. And it was great fun to put those stories together, even though there was deadline pressure and there was many weeks, a little more than you needed to or wanted to do in a week. But I knew readers would appreciate these stories, and I would get excited doing the interviewing. I'd get excited being out there with them, and I'd get excited writing about it. And then the great thing about newspapers is it's a quick turnaround. You find out next week if readers appreciate it or not, and many would call or send letters or texts or whatever. And so it was a great experience, a great process.
Is it something you went to school for and, you know, took formal training in journalism and writing? And, you know, did you see your career evolving and, you know, started out in advertising, it looks like, and you just got a lucky break to start writing? Or, you know, how did you get the
training? Yeah, I kind of got off on the advertising side of things, working for an ad agency in Kansas. But then once we moved north and I started, I hooked up with the Ely Echo newspaper, and they would let me write almost whatever I wanted. And that's when I really started discovering the joy of the writing and telling stories. And then I went, just tried to get experience at a little bigger newspaper in Colorado for a year and a half before my wife and I moved back to Duluth. And yes, I had a degree in journalism from the University of Kansas, and almost everybody who has come to the paper has a journalism degree. It's pretty much a basic requirement. So yeah, it was from there, it was just a matter of kind of deciding what to cover, and I always tried to make our outdoors pages very inclusive of all user groups, you know, and not just hunting and fishing, but paddlers and campers and everything else. So I thought that was important. If you're enjoying the outdoors up here, there are a lot of ways to do it, and over the course of my career, there became even more and more ways to do it, you know.
That's right. That's right. That was just where I was going with the question as far as what did you see change in those, you know, 38, 40 years, let's call it, you know, in the woods,
yeah,
activities, you know, not so much just hunting, fishing anymore, but sea kayaking and fat tire biking.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, what else has been introduced?
Yeah, those things for sure. And the advent of, you know, ATVs hadn't been invented basically when I started my job, and that became very popular and remains so. Snowmobiling, the whole mountain biking scene, and then now, like you say, the fat biking in the winter, and surfing on Lake Superior. I mean, there's just people of the generations that come along just keep finding new ways to have fun outdoors. So we tried to incorporate that, all of those, as they came on the scene. And you look at what happened even in hunting and fishing, and the number of accidents in hunting dropped dramatically as Blaze Orange was required, and we got into releasing walleyes, something that was basically kind of unheard of when I started my job in 1980. And now there's slot limits on many lakes that require anglers to put fish back, and the fisheries are probably healthier as a result of that.
Something else has certainly evolved, Sam. It's technology, spot GPS locations and satellite phones. And you have any philosophical thoughts on low, let's say, cell phone coverage in the boundary waters?
Oh, no, I don't have too many philosophical thoughts. It's not worth it because things are going to happen probably regardless of what my philosophy on it is. I really love what smartphones have given us, the ability to help me in telling stories or gather information or whatever, the mapping and everything. But I also love just leaving all that behind and going to the canoe country. And I miss parts of it. I miss being in touch with my family. Our kids are living overseas, and we, text or call daily, text more, I guess. But I miss that when I'm out in the woods. But I really like to just immerse myself in the wilderness, if we're in the wilderness or wherever, and just be there and not be kind of nickel and diming myself with the latest little updates from whatever news sources you want to consult, or just to have something beeping in your pocket or buzzing in your pocket or whatever. It's good to just put all that away for a while.
Yeah, gear and gadgets, they're great when you need them, but sometimes distractions. So Dave Cherstick, yeah. Talking with Sam Cook, pretty much well known throughout the region as the outdoor news writer for the Duluth News Tribune, 38 years, now retired. Sam, how's retirement treating you?
Well, it's pretty darn good, I can tell you that. It's really been great because it allows you to, I do many of the same things, hunt, fish, camp, whatever. I just now do them with my friends and don't have the pressure of having to write a story. So I miss a little bit the storytelling aspect of it and the feedback from readers, but it's just great to be on a more relaxed schedule and to choose to do what you want. And my wife and I can do whatever we want, and I can still go do stuff with friends. And so the absence of stress and the freedom to do things all week long has just been great. And it's allowed me to reconnect with a lot of old friends, do trips with old friends that I hadn't really been able to make time for while I had a job. It just I can still do stuff with close friends close by, but also do things with people who I haven't seen for years, and we've been able to get together. And just coming up for the winter's gathering, I was always covering the Wisconsin Deer Opener that weekend, and so I never could be free to come up to that. So it allowed me to do that this year too, which I really enjoyed.
Nice. Well, congrats. And you had a nice exit interview with the paper in April. Looked like one of your stated goals of retirement was to sleep on the ground more. And you had a benchmark there about 30 some nights when you were actively reporting. And how are we working on that? How are you doing on that goal?
Well, I tied my record. I know people must think it's odd that a person would keep track of how many nights he sleeps on the ground. But on the ground, I accept that that's weird. But it's just a measure of how many days you're spending in good country for me. And I hit 32 this year, and I managed to hit 32 one other year a long time ago. But most years it wasn't anywhere close to that. So I was happy with that, and we'll try to see where we end up this year. And it's because I'm that odd, I'll keep track again, I suppose. But that's a month. That's not too bad, but I think I can do better.
And have you changed preference for sleeping pads as you've aged? Is there more rickety joints in the morning? Do you have a thicker pad? Well, with some strategies for staying active as you age?
Dave, what are you implying here? As I've aged, rickety joints. You know, I don't know what you're talking about for sure there, you know.
Oh, my apologies, yes. Sam.
No, I'm just kidding. I still use a Therm-a-Rest pad, the basic pad most of the time, and I sleep pretty comfortably on the ground. My wife has an inflatable pad just a mattress that inflates, and in the summer I use that some of the time if I can borrow it from her. But I don't mind sleeping on the ground. I don't get too sore, and I'm pretty happy to do it. So that technology hasn't changed too much.
Well, just so you stay out of the RV sales, stay out of the RV.
Well, yeah, there has been some discussion of that, but we'll see where that goes. I don't know.
That's what happens when you retire.
Yeah.
Well, you know, here's something, Sam. Let's touch on a topic pretty close to home, adventurers. We got, you know, Dave and Amy Freeman, Lonnie Dupree. I see Lonnie's on his, he's coming up on a solo climb, Mount Hunter. You've covered this over the years. Do you have any insights as to what makes these folks tick, why they're out there doing that, doing what they do?
Yeah, it's been a really interesting thing to get to know, you know, Will Steger, Paul Shirky, Lonnie, and folks like that. I think sometimes we, as just kind of regular folks around home doing smaller trips, we think, whoa, that's crazy. Why is he doing that? Or why is Lonnie going back to Denali for the fourth time to try to climb it alone in winter and become the first person to do that? And I think that they, most of these people from the interviews I've done with them, they, at a very young age, they just were given freedom to explore in a way that a lot of our parents didn't let us do. They were trying to make sure we didn't get hurt or get lost or something. But I remember, Dave Freeman, with his dad, Dave and Amy spent a year in the Boundary Waters a year ago, and we did some stories about that. And I remember talking to Dave's dad when they came back, and his dad said that Dave, when he was like a freshman in high school, they went to the Boundary Waters on a family trip. And when they finished the trip, Dave said, "Dad, I want to stay here and go out for another week by myself." Wow. He was a freshman in high school, and his parents let him do it. And that is something that is kind of makes people like that, I think, a little bit different from a lot of us who weren't given that freedom. Will Steger from Ely, who, you know, went to the North Pole and across Antarctica and everywhere else, he read the book Huckleberry Finn, and at 15, he and his brother Tom, who was 17, took a little motorboat down the Mississippi River to New Orleans and back, and ran into all, you know, kinds of problems and whatever. But, and I remember asking Will about that, and he says, this is a quote I looked up from the story I wrote, "That was the way I was raised. My dad was an entrepreneur. We pretty much didn't have any rules. We could do whatever we wanted. He said, as a result of that, I never saw barriers. That's why I've been able to do what I've done. I never saw barriers as a child." And I think that's a common theme for people like this who become these extremely successful and advanced explorers. Paul Shirky of Ely and his friend Greg Lays, right after college, started an organization called Wilderness Inquiry to take people with disabilities to the canoe country. And that company's still going, and Paul's running, you know, dog sled trips out of Ely. They enjoy operating at a very high level of expertise at whatever they're doing. And I think there are thoughts in the outdoor world about operating at your just manageable level of difficulty. And those folks really like to be at that level where they don't always know how things are going to turn out, and they almost always come through.
Well, and it's good advice for parents, you know, let the kids go.
Yeah, I mean, each parent has to make their own decisions about that, but clearly people can do a lot more than we think they can, I think. And that's why I don't think it's crazy when Lonnie's going back to try Mount Hunter again. He tried it 2 years ago, and I think it didn't make it. And went back in the summer and learned more about it and thinks he knows a route that'll work. And part of it is probably ego. I don't deny that that's part of it, to, you know, put your name on a place or a map or whatever. But I think a lot of it is just that's where they want to operate at that level of challenge. And it's a logical step to them. What Lonnie's doing is a logical step after all the winter and Arctic experience that he's had. And it's not as crazy for him as we think it is.
Well, Sam, we're running out of time. Final question. You've spent so much time in the woods. You've had such quality experiences. Any advice for the novice or those that are sort of sitting on the edge of the lake and they're wondering, how can I make the most of this experience?
Oh, I just think just keep going. Just, you know, we can't do expeditions every week. We can't go for a two-week trip every other week. But we can walk somewhere today and go poke around. And so many of the times that I go out, even on trails just right here in Duluth and stuff, you come across things that surprise you. And it usually has to do with the natural world. It's a bird, it's a frog, it's a whatever. And I think those discoveries are waiting to be made every day. And so I'd say just keep going and don't be afraid to dream big and don't be afraid to strike off at something that you're not sure you can handle, because you can probably do it.
Yeah, it's a great test, nature. Well, great advice, Sam. Thanks so much for your time. Congratulations on the retirement. Best of luck. I guess I will squeak in one last question. What's next for you? What's the next big trip?
Oh, I don't know. We're going, our kids live overseas, and so we're heading to Scotland for a couple weeks in April, and we'll poke around over there and take a hike or a few hikes or something. It'll be mainly to be with the family, but we'll see some new territory, and so that's the next big thing on the trip. We'll do something before that. We may take off to the Southwest for a couple weeks here after the new year and go to some parks that we haven't had time to get to before, too.
Nice. Keep sleeping on the ground.
Yeah. All right. Thanks. I will.
Thank you, Sam. Happy holidays.
Okay. Same to you, Dave. Appreciate it.